We are recording for Radio Tacoma, and my name is Erica. I'm a local affordable housing advocate, and I volunteer with the Tacoma Tenants Union as a legislative organizer. And today we are talking to Dua Rahima Williams and from the Resident Action Project, and Kathy Pick from the Tacoma Tenants Union, as a kickoff for our organizing around statewide legislative session that's starting in January, and really with a focus today on some of the exciting work that is going to be happening around rent fairness. So creating some caps to rent increases and increasing notices around rent increases, and really how important it is for us to get tenants involved in this movement and share their voices with us. So I'm hoping we can just kind of go through a really loose conversation. I know I sent you all the questions in advance so you could kind of be prepared to talk, but really I think this should be a nice open-ended conversation. So I just really wanted to start with you both to introduce yourself. And Dua Rahima, would you like to start, please?
I can. Good morning, and thank you for having me. My name is Dua Rahima Williams. I am the statewide organizer for Resident Action Project, aka REP, which is a program of the Washington Low Income Housing Alliance.
Do you want to tell us a little bit more about REP and how it creates space for those impacted by housing injustice?
Yes. So the Resident Action Project, also known as REP, as I said, is a program of the Washington Low Income Housing Alliance, the Housing Action Fund, and we are our national partner is Community Change, and as well as other housing justice network like Rockin' Oregon, Runnin' California, and Residents Organizing for Louisiana. And for here in Washington, we're a network of folks from across the state, and our members consist of those living in affordable housing, have lived expertise of housing injustice, insecurities, formerly or currently homeless, as well as nonprofit staff and resident service managers. And together we are building a class race movement and centering the voice of those with lived expertise.
It's so important to be getting these voices. Kathy, why don't you talk a little bit about your work with the Tacoma Tenants Union, where it came from, and what we're doing in Tacoma in terms of empowering residents.
Sure. My name is Kathy Pick, and I am a renter currently in the city limits of Tacoma. And I'm also the lead organizer for the Tacoma Tenants Union. We got started as the Tiki Tenants Organizing Committee when 62 units received notification of their new property owner, and at the same time, a 20-day notice to vacate. The injustice towards these tenants who were seniors and disabled tenants really sparked a local outrage, and a true grassroots movement was born. We attended city council and committee meetings, and in very short order was able to move the needle significantly because of this outrage. We were also joined by other tenants at another property who were also being displaced. So these mass displacements were clearly unjust, and we were able to get a lot of policy changes in the city of Tacoma, which helped to spark them being enacted statewide. And so about a year ago, we picked up the baton again and ran with it. And we have renamed ourselves just the Tacoma Tenants Union, just in keeping with the organizers in the beginning who are part of the labor union movement as well. So that's a nod to them. And we are reaching out to the 110,000 plus tenants in our city. And we have also expanded our outreach into Pierce County over this last year. So Our organizing efforts are important because in this way, people realize that the problems that they're having with their landlords or property management are very common and that they're not alone. And that in itself is a huge relief to people. Organizing is also important because one person fighting the system is not as effective as, you know, a couple hundred people fighting the system.
Sure. Absolutely.
So it's that collective power. It's learning to coalesce. It's learning who our allies really are. I've taken part in some of RAP's amazing events over this last year and getting myself informed on how these injustices impact the BIPOC community and what I can do to be an ally to them. And that's been very important for me personally, growing and understanding the different people groups that we represent, if that makes any sense whatsoever.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that it's pretty fair to say that renters are more likely to be single, to be household of color, to be low income. And so it's really important that we have an understanding.
Well, not just low income. My heart really is for the people that we began with, people who were on a fixed income. And most of the policies are towards an unrealistic definition and expectation of what affordability really is. Seniors, disabled people, veterans who receive veterans benefits, and I would even include students into the fixed income category because most of those people are not necessarily in charge of their income. Yes, students can work, but then their schoolwork suffers. I've been a college student for the last, I'm a grad student now, but for the last 5-6 years, and I am not in charge of what I receive through filling out and qualifying for the Pell Grant and as well as the Washington State Need Grant. So when those things are fully funded, I was not in charge of those amounts. So, absolutely. You know, you have a lot of, it's breaking my heart right now because there are a lot of seniors, especially women, who find themselves in a shared housing or roommate situation. And over this last year, I've spent a lot of time talking one-on-one and supporting these tenants who are being subject to landlords who don't know the laws. And if they do know the law, they just really don't care. These women are facing harassment, intimidation, and even a physical violence. Women with children are finding themselves in substandard housing as a result of this dynamic, this unaffordability for rental space and unavailability for rental space. And it's heartbreaking, and we need to fix that.
Yes, absolutely.
Quickly.
Well, I think what you, you know, what you're talking about the importance of organizing and really bringing light and a voice to folks who are in these situations. I'd like to ask both of you, maybe let's go back to Duo Rahima. What are some success stories that you've seen with this work?
So before we go on to that, let's talk about, I just want to step on, touch on some things that Kathy spoke on. And hi, Kathy, good to see you.
Hi, I know, right? I missed you.
So as we all know, the most people who are impacted by housing injustice are Black, Indigenous people of color, you know, people in the LGBTQI, are seniors, veterans, single parents, and that's just to name a few, immigrants and refugees in single family homes, you know, and especially single men who have their children, not just single women, but single men are excluded from a lot of programs because they're men. You know, or someone who has a child that is a male child who's a certain age and can't get into shelter and things like that. And the ally part is like really what we need as a community of color is to have our allies stand behind us and let us speak. And we also know that there's other systems that impacts communities of color from getting into housing, like the criminal justice center system, because we know status shows that 1 in 3 Black men will be arrested, and not just arrested, charged, and sent to prison, which is another barrier for them to get housing or for them to live with their families and come home. You know, a barrier that prevents us from getting into housing or even trying to buy a home. So, and we talk about a livable wage because we talk about affordable housing, but we also need to start talking about livable wages. And I agree with Kathy about fixed income, because as a statewide organizer, I talk to the seniors up in Bellingham, Vancouver, over here in Spokane, and all across the state. Of those are people on fixed incomes, you know, living in a low, that's supposed to be low income, but with every time there's a raise, like Social Security, SSI is going up in January, but is it? It doesn't matter, because that's going to absorb the rent.
Yeah, so absolutely.
Not going to have anything. So I just wanted to touch on that.
I think you're absolutely right. And what I've been hearing too from our local housing providers is, you know, even people who are on housing vouchers. I mean, if you have rents increasing, then people can't even use their vouchers because they have to cover that difference.
And landlords are getting around of not doing a year lease.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or making it above the voucher standards. And so I believe in Spokane, our housing authority has raised the amount of the vouchers to kind of meet the need. But we'll see how that goes. Because I know for many years, people have been losing their vouchers because they're not able to find housing.
Yeah, and then they can't serve as many. My understanding is that the vouchers are higher value. You know, sometimes it's difficult unless the Fed's providing that money, or they might have to serve less people. I mean, it's so many difficult choices that really come out of these rent increases that I don't think get thought about on that wider, you know, systemic level that you and Kathy are talking about.
Right.
That is true.
So, absolutely.
You all have to excuse my voice. It's really cold here, so the heat has been on. My voice is really, really dry. So I got kind of open because it's like tomorrow's supposed to be like 0 degrees. So it's kind of like really cold here in Spokane. And so I'm trying to get some fresh air circulating in the house.
Oh, lovely. Yeah.
So you said some success stories. So
yes, please.
So in 2021, alongside with the Housing Alliance, we won a statewide organizing award from the National Low Income Housing Coalition. We had RAP members who have started their own nonprofit. We have one who has started a nonprofit, a shelter program down in Clark County. We helped pass different bills from last year, like Just Cause.
Yes.
What else? We had them testify over on different bills last year. Some passed and some didn't. Like the different ways that a tenant can pay their rent. Like that was Senate Bill 5749, mm-hmm. Instead of like having to pay online because everybody doesn't have access to pay online or doesn't have a checking account. So that passed.
By the way, that bill was sponsored by. She is now my state senator, Yasmeen Trudeau, of the 27th district.
Yes.
And that happened because it happened to her mom, who doesn't speak English as her first language. And she was very confused about how she was supposed to pay her rent. And Yasmeen looked into it and, you know, on behalf of her mom, but look at the positive impact that bill alone. You know, we think about these systemic issues, and one thing that we forget to talk about is all these extra fees that tenants have to pay. You have to pay.
Exactly.
Not only were they forcing people to use the portal, but oh, by the way, for the privilege of paying your rent, we're going to charge you.
Right. $15 service fee.
It's like, you know, there's a famous book, and I can't remember the author, but it talks about nickeled and dimed. And that's one of the way that our lower income families and tenants have to deal with it, you know, these excessive late fees, having to use an app just to have access to the laundry now. That's a thing now.
Yeah. Well, and to be banked. I mean, really being banked, that cuts out a lot of people who are immigrants, people who having a bank account is a whole nother.
Unbanked, unwired, and people don't think about those things because everybody has a smartphone, right? Well, slow your roll. That's not necessarily the case. I just thought I'd throw that in there as another.
No, I'm glad you did because I think what you're talking about really is that visibility of a lot of people. And I think that's what's so important about the work that Tacoma Tenants Union and that Resident Action Project is doing is creating that visibility. And I think there's some fear maybe in that, you know, I think what I've encountered when talking to people is maybe they don't necessarily have the excitement or the feel as empowered to get involved and speak up. And so that's why I just think it's so, it's just really important to hear, you know, about the different success stories that have come from people speaking up and to understand the power that they have to make change.
That is well, true. One success we had this last year was, so the people who were original Tiki tenants, some of those people got to go back. Once the property was rehabilitated, they got to actually go back and be residents there. But their management has changed so many times that they don't even know how these people got here, right? So we had some folks who were OG Tiki tenants who were afraid that they were going to lose their housing because they were working full time now, that, you know, a variety of things. And because of coalescing with local people, I found out that nope, they were grandfathered in. Their only requirement to be a tenant there was that they were there originally and they had the right of return, thanks to our organizers and the lead of the Tacoma Housing Authority at the time. And so I was able to help our people understand that no, your housing is secure. You may have to recertify, but it's not going to be income based. There's a clause in the contract, people. And so that was, for all of the struggles and all of the time management issues I've personally faced, you know, as a wife, as a mom, as a substitute teacher, that alone was worth everything to me. So that was a local success story that I will treasure forever because I know that our people are safe and secure.
And that's cool. So like for Resident Action Project, our thing is like making sure that our voices is heard and that we're at the table, because we know that the belief is that my belief is that those closest to the problem are closest to the solution, but always further away from the tables and the resources. But RAP says no more. And so we've been, you know, knocking on doors and creating relationships and sitting at the table. So since I started Resident Action Project back in March of 2021, in April, Washington Commerce, the homeless adult unit, had contacted us to go over. They wanted some members to, you know, have feedback on a grant they were on, this RFP they were working on and some wording and things like that. And we had a really good conversation, and we've been having monthly conversations with them. And sometimes, so some RAP members will help facilitate. So 1 month RAP would have, will facilitate, and the, you know, and it would alternate, and the comments would facilitate. And so, and we've been doing this for a year, trying to change language, where money's going, how it works, learning about their programs, or hearing, you know, things that we're doing, and also what community changed. We're part of, RAP members are part of a national housing coalition that have been in conversations with Secretary Fudge of HUD, Jen Jones, Chief of Staff, of trying to change some things on a national level with housing and urban development.
Come on now.
So yeah, that's great.
Mm-hmm. being up in them, being at them tables and seeing the change that what we, our input has been making a change. So Comrade sends us different things. Hey, can you send this out to RAP members? We need feedback, you know, on this and that, and certain, depending on what it is. We have RAP members who sit on our board for the Alliance, and also the House in Action Fund, which is our C4. We have done a few candidate forms. We do voter registration because we believe that voting is another way to use your voice and its power. We do door knocking. You know, we've done door knocking last, you know, if, up in Bellingham, up in the 42nd district. Yeah, so up in the 42nd district, we did door knocking after we did a summit up there. We have one of our RAP member who is on the board of National Low Income Housing Coalition, and so they're also in different committees and things in their own community as well. So, because that's important, because it is their community, we also, you know, do statewide. So we're going to start doing like regional chapters, so we can have regions, like different counties, depending on how big the counties are, come together and talk about it, and then come together at our statewide meeting.
So I wanted to point out too that I remembered seeing that you all were up in Bellingham, and then you were up in Marietta, which I'm familiar with that area, and it's very rural. And the question that came to mind for me when you were talking is, you know, what when you say that people who are closest to the solution are also furthest from the table, what do you think is important for policymakers, people who are doing outreach to different communities? Like, what's important for people to understand about those conversations? Like, how can they really create tools that prepare people to give input on some of these really complex issues? How have you seen successes in that?
Well, RAP is about storytelling. That's kind of the one way we build power, is by organizing, storytelling, and civic engagement. So storytelling is a tool that we use. Everybody is not going to tell their story, not in a way of speaking, but we also are finding different ways to share our story, if it's by a video, media, pictures, spoken word, however somebody wants to share. We also do a training. So we do a lot of peer-to-peer training, because other members will teach and will facilitate a class on their knowledge and their expertise, and do a class on how to tell you how to write your narrative and share your story. And community change also gives us a lot of training as well. So when I identify members who have these leadership skills, they'll go on this training as well. Like, we did a movement building training. We did a peer-to-peer training. We do how to facilitate a power hour, which is like a community meeting and listening to, you know, going to or somebody who wants to host like four or five friends and have an intimate conversation about what's going on in their community and how they can help make a change locally and statewide. Mm-hmm. So it's all about creating relationships with folks and not making it transactional. But and meeting people where there are, because what's happening, even though everything is happening, like everybody is getting rent increases, impacting people, different populations in different ways.
Yeah.
And as a person who's been here over in Eastern Washington, you know, since 2016, coming from King County, when I first moved here, I seen like, oh my gosh, we're forgotten. We're like the forgotten people over here. It's like, how do I get people to make sure their voices is heard, so, you know, everything is not focused in King Pearson, Snohomish County? How can we get funding over here, like in Yakima County, in Grant County, in Spokane County, in Whitman County, in Ferrier, in Stevens County, and all the other counties in between? How can we get that over here in Central and West, in Eastern Washington?
Yeah.
So good. So good. All of that.
Well, all of that. And when I hear you talk, I just, you know, hear over and over again that these challenges, like Kathy said, these are challenges that are being faced on an individual level, but they really are systemic, and they're really not people's fault. It's very much a bigger issue and a bigger set of complications. you know,
Can I address
that it's
that
not
for just
people's
a
fault.
second?
Yes, please.
That is a very important, and thank you for bringing that into the conversation, because people still have this archaic idea that their landlord is, I mean, for landlording is intimidation. It is scarcity management. It is all of that. And there's a lot of people who don't know their rights. And once they do know their rights, they are, without using any other word that I can think of, is they're terrified to exercise those rights because it's their housing. They want to stay housing secure and they want to be in compliance so that themselves and their family have roofs over their heads. And a lot of times people live in fear. They live with that fear, that intimidation,
survival,
harassment. And I have lived experience with that, so I know that others do as well. Our property was vandalized. There was some, it was just really, really bad. And I'm very, very grateful to be out of that and to live where the management is professional. Their behavior is not only professional, but they actually care about their tenants, which is very rare. And I'm very mindful of that. So, you know, it's that, so that social emotional aspect of it. And COVID didn't do us any favors because, well, I know for the organizers, we were very grateful because we weren't quite spread so thin. You know, we could jump on these virtual meetings all day long, which was great, but it was more isolating for the tenants because they thought that they were the only ones that were having to deal with these issues. Mm-hmm. And so now that we're out of it and we can gather together, I agree with what she's saying. Even a small group of five people can change the dynamic in a neighborhood or in a complex or a building. And thank you for reminding us that this is a statewide issue and not everybody looks like what we look like over here on the west side. So thank you for that reminder, Dua. I appreciate you.
Whew, I had to take a breath after that because it's fairly an emotional topic.
It is an emotional topic. And we have, like I said, over this last year, I've talked to a lot of tenants, mostly senior women who are facing physical intimidation. They're concerned for their personal safety on a daily basis. And that breaks my heart because I say it all the time, but I really truly believe this. Every person deserves safe, affordable, and sustainable housing. Yes. That's my definition. That's what I fight for every day.
A place where they can thrive in, children can thrive in, they can build yes. gardens and be sustainable. They have the same amenities that the apartments that are fair market rent have.
Yeah. And by golly, if they're going to raise the rent, let's do some improvement. I just recently shared a graphic. This is like 1990, you know, kitchen and facilities at 2022 prices, and that mess needs to stop.
You know, what I'm hearing from the two of you really makes me think about how what we're talking about are the stakes, right? It's the stakes for these households. And we often talk about the stakes for landlords is the mortgage and the business and all these things, but the stakes for people and these and tenants in these situations where they are at risk of losing their homes are much higher, and where they're in housing, where they are being harassed, abused, that these stakes are a lot higher because they have to do with personal safety, mental safety, physical safety. You know, it makes me really want to go to the topic of why We have a lot of conversations, especially since the pandemic and especially since raising rents have pushed a lot of people. That is federal data, state data says that homelessness is connected to to rises in rent. I saw one figure that said for every $100 increase in median rent is connected to a 9% increase in homelessness. Like, there is no argument against it. And so what I really want to talk about is why are tenant rights so important to the puzzle of homelessness? Why is it so important to really address that before people become homeless?
Back in the day, I used to do eviction prevention, which would stop people from becoming homeless, you know, tenants from becoming homeless. And then rapid rehousing started, and which for me, you know, rapid rehousing is good, but it has its good and it has its bad, because they took eviction prevention away. So that means somebody would have to become homeless, get an eviction notice, get them fees, and then they can do rapid rehousing, and then you're paying all this extra stuff, but they still have this on their record. It's like, so it was really kind of confusing. Yes, with rising rents, it's like, it's really hard because somebody is in a place not knowing if they can afford the rent, but how could they move if the rent is high, has went up where they currently stay, and the rents, everybody is raising rent, it makes it hard for someone to find something that's safe. And making, you know, safe. They can find some. They might can find something, but is it safe? Is it like a place that they can really live in and thrive? You know, because now they're settling. Some people are settling, and people are moving in with their families. And, you know, if you're under a roof and you have somewhere safe to stay, you're not considered homeless, but you are homeless because you're at risk of being homeless because you are staying with someone else. You know, and so it comes to like, yes, the increases in rent is because people don't know how they're going to, if they're going to be able to pay the rent. So House Bill 1904, which is one of our priorities, the Alliance, is which then was introduced in 2022 by Rep. Peterson, which will require the landlord to provide a 6 month notice of significant rent increases, but it would also provide tenants with the right to quit their lease if they cannot afford to pay that without penalties. So, and that would apply both to residential tenants and manufacturing housing tenants. And it's going to be a new bill number starting January 9th. And mm-hmm. I think Rep. Marcy is going to be supporting this bill, if I'm right, but don't quote me on that.
I think you might be right. You know, and I think too, that notice, that kind of goes back to loopholes, right? I mean, that there's currently loopholes in how people can raise rent to get people out.
Yes.
Can you two speak to that a bit?
So this would, it would close. This would also prevent the rent gouging by capping rent increase and regulate fees and close the just cause loophole that allows landlords to use the rent increase to deny tenants of their rights under the State Residential Landlord Tenant Act. So this is really huge because this will help folks from across the state with that. So
it's really big. It's what we've been wanting.
Right. And I know you should have, Erica, the second one that's coming up January 5th, and we'll hear from Tram, who they passed the rent law like this down in St. Paul.
So. Yes, the Advocates for Rent Fairness on January 5th.
Yes.
From 5 to 7, which...
So, then there's the other bill, House Bill 2023, which was introduced by Rep. Hackney in 2022, which is to create an enforcement mechanism for landlords' obligation under the Residential Landlord Tenant Act. And this will create a legal process for tenants to hold their landlords accountable and to shift state laws from self-help laws to rights that can be enforced by a court of law. And this would create a very fast and affordable and very accessible court process for tenants to ask for a judge to intervene. So it's not, you know, for those who, You know, it would help with language justice. It would help with somebody who really doesn't know their right. And it would help so much and from people who've been taken advantage because they didn't know or they were afraid to use their voice.
Yes.
Right now, tenants have no mechanism to hold their landlords accountable, even when tenants are illegally locked out or face serious repair issues, even when landlords violate source of income discrimination protections or landlords harass tenants or illegally enter apartments. This would also put tenants' protection under the enforcement of the State Attorney General and the Consumer Protection Act. And it will provide important protections and penalties when violated. So them are the two bills that we're working on, but we're also working on a lot of budgets. Ask, like investing $400 in the housing trust fund. And there was the one there to preserve affordable homes and investment in home ownership. If opportunities for Black, Indigenous, and other people of color should. What else? I'm just going to read a little bit. In the housing and essential need benefit, Cliff, you know how somebody is on the HEN program, and so they're like in the thing of either on ABD right now or on their way to probably getting Social Security, SSI. But so what they want to do is not in their, then they're no longer eligible once they get SSI for HEN. So this budget ask is to keep them on HEN when they get SSI. Because we know they need that. They still need that assistance because that's a fixed income. So
that's something we heard from the Lived Experience Coalition, that, you know, somebody who had experienced that and was pushed into homelessness.
Right.
You know, talked to that very gap. And that's an important one that I saw coming out that we need to be speaking out for.
And then it's also like, and also the in the requirement that those who are on ABD and once they get their Social Security, they have to pay that back for every month. So they're trying to stop, one of the asks for the budget is not for them to have to pay that back. So they also want to increase funding for statewide right to counsel to properly operate the program, so people will be able to get that, and doing an allowed eviction defense screening line to assist tenants who are not yet eligible for right to counsel. That's some other bold budget ask. So kind of like, that's kind of what we're, some of the things around budget that we're asking in the two bills for this session.
Please.
So this is what we do. We rely on the Washington Low Income Housing Alliance and their legislative updates. So if you want this information on when these bills are introduced, when they're allowing for public comment, and want to be kept in the loop, go to the Washington Low Income Housing Alliance, go to their webpage and sign up for, and you will receive emails. That way you can inform yourselves, your groups. I rely very heavily on them for their updates, and Erica is going to be filling that gap for our organization this year. But those who don't have a legislative organizer can readily find this information
Get involved. When you hit the Get Involved tab, it'll take you to sign up for action. It'll take you to the Resident Action Projects.
Yes.
Talk to you about the legislative leads and anything like that, how you can get involved at the Alliance.
And we need people to be informed and talking about it. Mm-hmm. I would say that even if, you know, the locals say, even if, you know, like us for Tacoma Tenants Union, that we, even if we are putting things out on our page, you know, you don't have to just rely on that. Get educated and understand these issues so that you can be talking to the other people in your building, to your neighbors. Yes. I've recently made a connection with a neighbor who, you know, we were talking throughout her whole displacement from our neighborhood. She went from living in a house, stable with her high school age kiddo and her partner, and they've been displaced to a motel room in one of the most dangerous parts of town, and they're paying $2,600 a month for rent in this motel room because they were not able to get into anything and get past that screening requirement of having 3 times the income. So everything was about
Ridiculous.
$2,000 a month. They could probably afford $2,000 a month, but they only could show that they made enough to cover $1,800 a month with that requirement. So these are really issues that are pushing people into, situations where their jobs become unstable, their kids are unstable in school. Like these have such huge far-reaching effects. So get involved and get talking because that's how we can have more power together. So absolutely, I love that you pointed out that people can go and sign up for that and just get the
Oh,
information,
yes. Well, that's how I get informed. And look, I testified in front of the Puyallup City Council in August, as re because of a mass displacement that was happening there in a mobile home park. And I looked each one of those council members in the eye and the mayor of Puyallup, and then I repeated it again in Tacoma in October. I said, "We are going to be talking about housing justice in this next legislative session. What we say is going to depend on the outcome of what you're deciding right now. We will be talking about you. You get to decide what we get to talk about. So make a good choice. Make the ending of this story a good one." And I meant every word of it. I looked them right in the eye, eyeballed, "I'm watching you. And I will be talking about your decisions."
And when we start talking to them about, house injustice, we also might want to include racial justice and language justice in them conversations.
Absolutely. Environmental justice.
Yeah.
So all of it really intersects. Like, that's been my mental picture over this last year, a big giant Venn diagram that keeps growing with all of these intersection. I couldn't agree with you more, Dua. It is racial justice. It is environmental justice. When we talk about sustainable housing, I'm talking about making sure that the people who occupy these new spaces stay healthy, but that the surrounding environment stays healthy too. It's very
And that
important
they
to
have
me.
access, that they have access to jobs. What Duro Ahima was saying earlier about wage justice, if you've got to
Yes.
be, especially right now with the way things have been going, if you're spending a bunch of money on groceries and gas and everything, how are you going to be making ends meet if you live far away from your job?
If you keep getting pushed to the outer limits of the city and the county where there is no public transportation and there are no services, then you are being you that is economic eviction. When they keep pushing people out of the central areas of the city where medical services are, where social services are, that is all part of it. Yes, ma'am. Well, if they can't afford it, just move. Well, hold on a minute. Slow your roll. Think about who these people are and think about their role in your life, because these are the folks who ring up your groceries. These are the folks who work at the restaurants that serve you the food. Okay, think about the people that you're impacting when you say very misinformed and uninformed things like, "Well, if you can't afford it, just move." That's part of the narrative that is so, that's part of the NIMBYism that is so difficult in this work to combat. But listen, my undergrad is in business, so I speak these people's language. And when they start talking about their business model and this and that, and this is your investment property, please explain to me what sector of the economy gives you a guaranteed investment. No. You cannot go into this with the mindset that this is an investment, but also that you're going to be earning a passive income. That's not how investments work. You have to stay on top of it. What you put into it is what you're supposed to get out of it. And if you are a property developer or property manager and you're benefiting from all of these systems that allow you to build and allow you to put in these multifamily dwellings, then you darn well better be giving back to that community in the form of affordable housing, tiered rent structures, so that people who are in those fixed income and extremely low income categories are able to have a place to live. We have just as much right to that safety and affordability as anybody else, regardless of their income, regardless of how quote unquote productive they are. I'm over it. I'm done. But I can speak their language and I can look at them face to face and say, you know what? You can change your business model. You did it during COVID. You can do it again. But these folks don't have that same privilege. They are not able to pivot that quickly and adjust because their days of participating in market activities are over. They can't keep pace with you. Tenants keep spending more and more and more of their income on just remaining housed. And then we have gas prices going through. Do you know how expensive things are at the grocery store? I was shocked. Just doing some basic holiday shopping, I was shocked. I was like, what is happening? So people should not be forced between, you know, having food to eat and having gas to get to work or wherever they need to go, you know, taking their kids to school because they've been pushed out to the outer ends of the county and they have to drive their child to school. They don't have a school bus at their corner. So, you know, we've got all of these people in different segments of our society need to be remembered. And I loved what Dua said. They need to sit at the table where these decisions are being made. And if we can bridge that gap, then we've done a great day's work as allies and advocates. I agree. I'm getting fired up for this.
Yes.
I am psyching myself up for a really good legislative session. It's longer, so we have more time to get stuff done. But I'm really looking forward to it. And also, what I said earlier, so the Washington Low Income Housing Association has...
It's not the association, it's the alliance.
I always say that.
I go by Dua Rahima, not just Dua, I go by both. Dua Rahima.
Dua Rahima, thank you. Thank you so much. I don't like misnaming people and I don't like misgendering people. So thank you.
Go ahead, Dua Rahima.
I just kind of want to like leave with something before, because I want to talk about like, so for us, like I said, rap is, you know, we do a lot of storytelling, and I know some people feel like they get into this work to be a voice of the voiceless, and I don't believe anybody is voiceless. Sometimes I believe that they don't know how powerful their voice is. Or they're worried about what somebody else thinks that their voice is, or they never get the opportunity to use their voice. Mm-hmm. I remember the first time I was invited to speak on a panel around mass incarceration, and I was, you know, and the impact it had on the family and in the community. And I was talking to Sandy Williams, you know, who was my mentor. And I said to her, it's like, I don't want to be on the panel with y'all. I don't want to articulate like y'all and the rest of the panel. It's like, what am I supposed to say? And she said, you don't need to speak like us because you speak from your heart. And that's what I like about you. And that touched me in a way that gave me so much confidence and power to use my voice. It's like, I'm not the most articulate and I know I stutter. You know, sometimes my words get stumbled and I might not know how to pronounce a word, but I speak from my heart. And I use my voice and my story to make change. And I've been doing that ever since, speaking from my heart about my lived experience and my truth. And so that anybody that's on this call listening, like I said, I don't believe anyone is voiceless. And I want to say to you that your voice does make a difference. And it doesn't matter. You don't have to articulate or speak as well as others. Because your words have power. Your story has power. So I just want to encourage folks to tell them, like my sister Sandy told me, to speak from your heart, speak about your lived experience, speak your truth, and because your words and voice have power.
That is so wise. And earlier when I asked what people can do to really welcome and encourage people to participate, I think you really just spoke to exactly that, is how do we really listen to each other, even if we don't necessarily speak the same language? And I don't think that language is just English or Spanish or any of the different world languages. I think some of that is also the language of class and experience and lived experience and stress, how we talk when we're stressed and we're anxious, how we might not be able to think straight. We have a lot of different languages that come from the heart. And so we really do need to listen to each other and encourage each other to speak in whatever form that comes out in.
For sure.
So to that, I think we're starting to get close. And to that, I really wanted to make sure that we have time to talk about how people can speak, which would be if we can start with rap, and if there's ways to get involved with rap, and then follow up with how we can get people involved with the Tacoma Tenants Union. When and where do we meet? What times? How can we
So,
contact you? How can we see your work? So.
you can join RAP. If you go to the Washington Low Income Housing Alliance website, there's a get involved, and you scroll down, you'll see the Resident Action Project. You'll also see take action, because you want to, know what's going on, especially during the legislative session and anything that we got going on. It's really easy when you do the take action, because things are already filled out, so you don't even have to write anything but your contact information, and it goes to your elected representative. RAP meets for a statewide meeting on the second Wednesday of each month by Zoom, at 5 o'clock. And we're going to be starting regional chapters across the state, so people in their region can talk together and come together as a community and talk about what's going on in their community, as well as what's going on statewide. We do have a social media page. We have a Facebook page, a private Facebook page. You can't miss it, because there's a t-shirt with kind of what we do on the back. We have a Twitter page and an Instagram page, Resident Action Project.
Oh, I was just going to say, and one thing that people can even do is if you're already attending a local meeting and maybe you want to be your rep representative at the local meeting you already have. I mean, this really it can be worked in a lot of ways, I think. So I was super excited to learn about what you all do. It's really cool, for better words, lack of better words.
And we also have a Facebook page where people can follow, and they can also contact us. That's where a lot of people drop in and ask questions. We also have our own web page, TacomaTenantsUnion.org, I think. I'm not sure exactly what that address is, but we'll make sure that you get that information. And if you do need one-on-one help, if you need somebody to contact you, we can provide our phone number that you can call or text. We meet on the second and fourth Mondays of each month. We are still doing those meetings virtually because we are looking to establish a sustainable meeting space. And so for the month of January, we will be meeting on the 9th and the 23rd, and that usually starts at 6:30 so that people can get home, get dinner, or whatever they need to do, spend a few minutes with their family before jumping on yet another call. But it's very important. The local policies that we're promoting right now are some of our community allies are doing. Home in Tacoma for All is a social housing project that we're on board with and that we've participated with since they started. Our crisis response team that is going to improve law enforcement impacts on both the housed and the unhoused when they're experiencing a crisis. And then statewide, we are looking forward to this legislative session, and we are supporting efforts to stabilize rents because the way that landlords have responded after the eviction moratorium with these huge rental increases and also non-lease renewals, which are displacing people from their homes, we've got to get ahead of that mess because we are our piece of the puzzle really is eviction prevention. And we are advocating for anti-displacement policies in our city and in our state that tenants can benefit from. So I hope that that was, it is tacomatenants.org. Thank you.
One thing I forgot to mention, Housing and Homeless Advocacy Days, mark your calendar, is going to be February 6th, 7th, and 8th. So on the 6th, we'll have a whole event. And on the 7th and 8th is when you'll have scheduled time to talk to your local officials. And if you've never been to one before COVID, it used to be held in Olympia for one day. You would see hundreds and hundreds of people with red folders and red scarves, anything red, because red represents the housing. But now we do it virtually, which is kind of like good because more people can participate in it. So also, you know, you'll find that information on Washington Low Income, WLIHA.org, website. So please, when the link comes out to sign up, please sign up for it, because we need to really get things passed around tenant protections and these rent increases so people can feel safe and secure in their homes. So we will need people to come out and testify. We need people to take actions, to reach out to your elected representative and let them know why they need to vote on these things. And so, you know, we need to come like good, just like they come with mom and pop landlords. We need to come with mom and pop tenants.
Yeah, yeah. And I'll say to that, that we'll be, I'm thinking, you know, there's some great trainings on public testimony that the legislature's added. So I'll be sharing those out on our Tacoma Tenant Union page, just so people can start to kind of understand like how it works. And I have the feeling that we will be having a little carpool, if not a convoy, down to Housing and Homeless Advocacy Days. Am I right, Kathy? That's something that
is
we'll
it probably- going to be, it's is not it going to be in virtual? Person.
It's not going to be in person. It's going to be virtual only. Oh, okay. RAP is planning to do an in-person, and it's kind of like regional from Pierce County to Clark County, like a one-day training on rent increases, and then do an action. So be looking out for some invites to come to that. Yeah. That's tentatively January 30th.
Thank you so much for facilitating this, Dua Rahima. It's so good to hear you again, and thank you for the reminders of how we can better support you.
We will. We do.
Thank you. Oh my gosh.
It's a marathon.
That was good. Thank you. Yes, not just me. We. Thank you.
Yeah. So, well, Kathy, Dua Rahima, is there anything else, final notes you'd like to say?
Thank you for having
before we have Malachi go ahead and stop the recording.
Yes, thank you, Radio Tacoma.
Thank you, Malachi. Thank you, Radio Tacoma.